Whenever you're ready.
All right. I'm Gina Hong Lee, and I'm the coordinator of Fiji Women's Rights Movement, a non-government organization that was established in 1986, basically to improve the status of women in Fiji.
So, as we all know, there's been a coup in Fiji which happened on the 19th of May. Could you, before we get into that, talk a little bit about the situation prior to that date? How was Fiji governed?
Fiji's been gained independence in 1970, and we had a good constitution following on from that. In most of the control, it was basically dominated by the Alliance Party. But however, in following on from that, in the before the 1987 coups, the Labour Party came into power, and based on a multiracial platform, plus was going to look clearly at workers' rights. Then the first coup happened in Fiji, and that was by Colonel Wambuka, who then later became the Prime Minister, and he deposed the then Prime Minister Timothy Bavandra. Now, and then following on from 1987, they put into effect a 1990 constitution, which in some ways gave paramountcy to indigenous Fijians in terms of political positions, such as a president, and gave a very positive sort of discrimination towards indigenous Fijians. Then later on in there was a strong review calling for a review of the constitution. Then in 1997, after sort of 2 years of a constitutional review commission was set up, and we clearly looked at how we could foster multi-ethnic power sharing, how we could build multiracial communities. We came with the 1997 constitution, of which a lot of civil society organizations were very happy with, plus it was widely consulted. The commission went right around the country, went abroad as well, and came up with the 1997 constitution. Now, that constitution has a strong power-sharing provisions, plus it's got a Chapter 28, which is has a strong equality clause that one cannot be discriminated on the basis of race, sex, gender, sexual orientation. Those things have been included in the strong Chapter 28.
Because that's quite unusual as well, to actually include sexual orientation.
Yes.
Isn't it? It's one of three countries that actually has that in their constitution.
Correct, yes. And then so we had a very strong constitution we were quite happy with, and we were working towards it. Then the last year's election saw the sweep from the Fiji Labour Party, and there was a
a sweep from the Fiji Labour Party.
Okay, then there was a strong support in the last elections in 1999, and that clearly put the Labour Party into a position of power. And the Labour Party is has a strong multiracial platform as well, but also a strong women's rights, sorry, workers' rights, and they also have a women's rights perspective that they have. Well, I think they looked at basic needs issues from the last elections, and that gave them power, and then they formed a government last year in coalition with the Fiji Labour Party and the VLV, which is a Christian Democrat Party.
So, looking at the ways that women are represented in the parliament, how are they having good numbers?
Yes, well, following on from Beijing, there was a strong move to improve women's political participation in parliament, and they wanted it at the highest levels. Now, the Wambuka government also put out a strong mandate on 30% of all boards and commissions should be made up of women. And however, no political party while they were sort of positive in trying to get women into powers of decision making or in the political processes, There was no party put out a mandate on the number of women that they would have standing for the elections, but they did try and encourage women to attend. I think most parties tried to do that. Fiji Labour Party put that out, and so did FAP as well, Fijian Association Party. But before that, in the former Imbuka government, we had only 5 women in parliament, and the last elections in 1987, we saw 8 women enter into parliament. And of those 8, 4 have ministerial positions. So it was a groundswell, and it was really positive from the last from the last elections. We certainly saw a greater number of women participating and also winning the elections.
Now, George Speight is calling for, one of the things that he's calling for is for increased participation and increased representation for Indigenous people. Prior to the coup, how did the Indigenous traditional methods of government work in with the democratic government?
This is the particular problem in that George Speight is using human rights Indigenous language to further say that he's furthering the cause of Indigenous population. I think that we have to be very clear that in terms of a context that the security of Fijian land ownership, Fijians own 85%, approximately 85% of land in Fiji. It's held by Fijians under the Native Lands Act, and the Native Lands Act was clearly is within the constitution is protected in that you have to have a majority of the Great Council of Chiefs, which is the paramount institution for Indigenous rights or Fijian Indigenous rights, in that it's secured in the constitution that 9 of the nominees of the Great Council of Chiefs have to veto that if any of these bills like native land, fisheries, will be put before Parliament. So in terms of the security of land or security of Indigenous interests, it is protected. The Constitution recognizes the paramountcy of Indigenous rights issues. But I think that we have in some ways, by taking on a democratic system, maybe we need to, there is an urgency now in which for us to be more vigilant in getting people to understand the democratic processes. Maybe in some ways, George Speight has tapped into it sort of cuts across race divide as well as social class divide in that maybe the rural Indigenous population have sort of felt a growing resentment, and George Speight is probably providing the answers at this time. I think that maybe it's the skewed sort of lack of development in some in the rural areas which has provided this sort of ethnic or growing sort of resentment. But I think we need to look at how is it that we can bring in these the traditional powers of traditional leadership and incorporate that within the democratic process, and understanding how is it that we can share in terms of the development of Fiji as a nation. I think that would be the approach.
Now, there's rumours that the western part of Fiji is talking about moving away from the eastern part of Fiji. What kind of politics goes into informing those kinds of splits?
Yeah, well, see, while on one hand George Speight has pushed for saying that he's furthering the cause of Indigenous interest, there is also the divide of within Fijian leadership as well, the sort of power struggles between the various confederacies. And this divide is because the people from the west believe that, because the former Prime Minister Timothy Bavandra, he came from the west, and when he was overthrown by the coup conducted by Rumbuka, there was this feeling that from the west, that every time someone from the west is put into a position of power, Mahendra Chaudhry comes from the west as well, from Ba, in that someone is put into a position of power, you know, there is this, from the East, there is this resentment of this, of them taking political power, and that is their reason as to why they want to now set up a divide. They say that they've got access to sugar and they have the airport, plus they have a strong tourist industry in the West, and now that this has formed a divide. I think that we've got to still look at Fiji as a nation as a whole, and I think that this complexity that has brought in the fact that that it's also in some ways a power for Fijian leadership as well.
So you were in Fiji only a few days ago. Mm. What's the feeling there? Are people feeling scared? Or
yes, there is. There is a fear of from NGO, from the civil society organisations. We have looked towards each other under the banner of the National Council of Women, and women's NGOs have spoken quite strongly. We have held vigils every day from 12 to 2 at the Holy Trinity Anglican Church, and women from various communities, the various ethnic communities, old women, young women, have come together to reaffirm our support for asking for the release of the hostages and also the restoration of democracy, because we do not want to go down the path of we have seen what has happened from the coup, the 1987 coups, and we do not want to go down that path. Also, we want to affirm that we live in a multiracial community. We have some tensions. We're not denying that we don't have these tensions, but we could work to fostering and building up on understanding and multicultural understanding. So the tension in Suva is that, when I was there last week, is that at times there is a feeling of because there are about 1,500 of his supporters still in parliament, the hostages are still in parliament under armed control, the army has surrounded parliament, but there is a sense of panic every time there's, you know, they see sort of maybe 50 or 100 supporters of Spate march down one of the roads linking in from parliament. You know, there's a rumor that goes around that, oh, something's going to happen, and we might have what had happened on Friday, May the 19th, and that we might have more riots and looting. So there is just panic, and then people close up their shops. While the military has taken over control, and we are in some ways, there's a sort of bit more security in Suva, in that we feel, okay, at least there is some sort of control with the military that this might not happen. There is still a lot of you know, tension in the buildings, in Suva city itself. Plus we've had, I think there are sort of unruly elements in some ways who are trying to disrupt people trying to get back to their normal everyday lives, and they have, you know, created havoc by saying that, you know, there may be a march, or that there may be a some trouble coming in, and everyone sort of panics and sort of wants to go home. Some of the workers who work in the city have not come back into work because there is just a little bit of a fear. And there's also the curfew, which starts at 8 p.m. at night and ends at 5 a.m. in the morning, so we are restricted in terms of our movement. There is more heavy army military presence in the various checkpoints around Suva. That is sort of what's happening in Suva, and then around other parts of Fiji there is sort of relative calm. I mean, the only thing is the Nandi airport has military presence, but we have also heard some reports of sort of unruly elements also taking control, taking into effect that there is a little bit of a breakdown, and they're also terrorizing some of the villages, some of the Indo-Fijian homes, demanding for livestock or demanding for cash. So we have that as well happening in some rural areas. Yeah.
And what's George Speight, or is the impression about George Speight and his relationship to women? I know there have been rumours around that he is a perpetrator of domestic violence.
I think that there has been this rumour that, you know, he has been in terms of domestic violence, but I think the whole issue is his whole nature of how he has taken over Parliament and the force, the use of violence. I think we are really concerned in that from the last coups, we did see the fact that you've got tension in your community, the fact that you have the sense of command or control from the military does move from the public arena into the private arena. If you're all confined and tense, there is this element of tension, and it can, because domestic violence is a problem in Fiji, is an ongoing problem against women in Fiji, and because of the public nature of violence and has moved on to the private sphere, I think that we will be probably seeing the same thing happen, and we could probably see maybe some frustrations or tension that cannot be taken out in the public sphere could probably end up in the homes of which women are usually the victims of such violence.
Well, thanks for talking to Community Radio.
Thank you.